Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you mind if I smoke?
It won't affect the test. All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can. It's your birthday. Someone gives you a calfskin wallet.
I wouldn't accept it. Also, I'd report the person who gave it to me to the police.
I need your deck. This is a bad one, the worst yet.
There was an escape from the off-world colonies 2 weeks ago. Six replicants, three male, three female. They slaughtered 20.
A Blade Runner's job is to hunt down replicants, manufactured humans you can't tell from the real thing.
What's this?
Roy Batty, probably the leader.
There was just one outfit making replicants that superhuman, the Terrell Corporation.
Mr. Deckard, Dr. Eldon Terrell.
I don't get it, Tyrell.
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto.
I was looking for six replicants in a city of 106 million people.
You ever see this girl, huh?
Never seen her. Buzz love.
What I didn't know was they were looking for me.
Questions.
I just do eyes. Just genetic design. Just eyes.
Hello?
I'm in a bar here now, down in the fourth sector. Why don't you come on down here and have a drink?
That's not my kind of place.
Time to die.
If I didn't care more than words can say, if I didn't care, would I feel this way? If this isn't love, then why?
Excuse me, Miss Salome, can I talk to you for a minute?
Are you for real?
He's a damn one-man slaughterhouse.
I'm going home.
Jones Avengers Endgame, it follows Joker, Wreck-It Ralph, Mamma Mia, here we go again. Titanic 2, Jack's back, 7 cents, Ghost Attack, Alien vs. Predator, except this on their friends. We'll keep watching the movies right up till our TVs break. So just crank up the volume till your speakers start to shake. You need a second take.
More human than human. It's me, Sebastian,
your human host.
That's our motto. Nothing's worse than having an itch you can never scratch. I'm Andy Schossler.
Wake up, time to die. And I'm Jordan.
So I expected More Human Than Human and Wake Up, Time to Die to be in the trailer.
But it wasn't, thank God.
But it wasn't, yeah. I had another quote.
Oh, please.
Embarrassing.
That was the whole thing.
It's when Bryant is telling Deckard that they lost 4 Nexus 6s.
Oh,
and he just
casually
kind of says, embarrassing.
Yeah, sucks to be you. Yeah. Welcome to our review of Blade Runner. Which version? Well, that's up for debate.
It's
2017 versions of this movie. I was chatting with a colleague of mine yesterday, about the fact that I had to watch Blade Runner to review it. And he's like, oh, I've been meaning to watch that, but I don't know which version I'm meant to watch. So I've just been not watching it for the last 10 years because there's so many versions. So I was like, it's like, which one are you watching? I'm like, the one on Netflix because it doesn't cost me anything.
Yeah, that's I have the no one idea what version I watched.
Yep.
The one available now on Netflix seems to be the only version that's available. That's the final cut, the director's cut, exactly how Ridley Scott wanted it.
Yep.
I watched the theatrical cut that I have my own copy of.
Is that
of.
Longer or shorter than the one that we watched?
I think it's shorter because the theatrical cut has the narration in it, the controversial narration,
yep,
which I like.
People apparently just mute that shit when they watch it.
Yeah, a lot of other people hate it.
Okay, yeah, my version didn't have that.
Yeah, I also had the scroll, like the Star Wars
bullshit. They all have that, yeah. Yeah, they have to read.
Well, what is this freaking narration but that they've cut? Because it takes away all the subtext from what I understand, right?
It's really not that much. It's maybe 10 lines that Deckard kind of narrates over a few scenes, but it's really not in a lot of the film. I think it adds to the noir appeal of the film.
Yeah, it would.
The controversy is that by the end of shooting, they tested the cut that they had a couple of times, and nobody was really getting it. The producers got a bit antsy. They said, "We need to have these few lines of narration just to let the audience know what's going on because it's just too confusing." Everybody disagreed. Harrison Ford even deliberately gave a bad reading in the hopes that they wouldn't use it. And you can kind of hear it, but for my money, it actually adds to Deckard's character that he's a retired cop who's been pulled back into service reluctantly, and he just doesn't give a shit. This isn't his fight. He's just doing it for the money at this point.
Right.
He's actually not involved in it in any way at the beginning.
Tickle me pink. Harrison Ford playing a character who doesn't care where he is or what he's doing. That is so fucking him every time.
Life.
But I was discussing this with my wife watching this, and just that the narration kind of, in the way that a picture paints 1,000 words, that it takes a lot of words to describe something that you can, understand instantly when you see it. In that same vein, a little bit of narration gives you context that is very difficult to show. But when you mix the two together, this scene and this little bit of dialogue that gives you, a little bit of history or just puts it in perspective, the two of them actually blend quite well to give you this bleak atmosphere.
Mm.
I think it works quite well. But am I to understand that you've never seen a version of Blade Runner with the narration?
I think I've watched it once on YouTube, isn't it, like just the narration part?
Okay.
But this is years ago, so I have no memory of what it
it's
really goes
hardly
into.
In it. It really is like 10 lines of dialogue dispersed through the film, and it's mostly around the middle of the film anyway.
Is it like this? It's me, Deckard. I'm not a robot. Maybe I am a robot. You'll find out in this movie. 1 second. My plug came out. What? A visual recording? Oh, no.
If you just listen to it, if you're not watching the film, if you're just listening to the recording, it sounds like Harrison Ford is sitting on a cattle prod or something, and he's just needs to get it out.
No, I mean more like it takes away the ending.
He's just giving the minimum performance not to get prodded, and that's all he cares about.
Good. That's me at work, really. I'm just working so I can tick the box. This is I did the minimum thing required so I can go to sleep.
Yep. But I think it actually works. But he didn't like it. Ridley Scott didn't like it. A lot of other members of the crew didn't like it.
Yeah.
I think it actually works. Okay. But that's the version I saw. And also that version doesn't have the unicorn dream sequence. Did you see the unicorn dream, Jordan?
I don't recall a unicorn dream.
Maybe it's not in the final cut. The one that's available on Netflix. But there is,
well, I didn't watch the cut on Netflix either. I just had a random one that I downloaded. I don't know what cut it was, but it didn't have any narration, and I don't recall there being any unicorns.
Again, there are multiple cuts of this film. The one with the unicorn dream sequence.
I'm just pulling it up on my screen now, just visually, so I can see it to see if it rings any bells.
It's just a horse running through a field. You know, it could have been taken out of Neverending Story.
I remember this scene. He's laying there. He's got that weird thing on his stomach.
Mm.
No? What was that? That whole scene was confusing. I guess we'll get to it in the long way around.
But the unicorn dream sequence is used in the versions, or is used as justification by Ridley Scott that Deckard is in fact a replicant.
Right.
Because at the end of the movie where Gaff has left the unicorn origami, that's to symbolize that he knows Deckard's a replicant because he knows about the
implanted memories.
Right.
And of which one of them was the unicorn dream sequence. Mm, okay. So he knows that he's a rep.
Is this a bit extra? Like, I mean, like the idea that he's also a robot feels like such a tacked on twist in theory.
Now, that's something that Ridley Scott confirmed back in 2000. So 20 years after the film was made, he sort of confirmed, yeah, Deckard's a replicant. But
then Harrison Ford's like, nah.
When they were filming it, both Harrison Ford and Rutger Hauer understood that Deckard was human.
And this was in my version.
And Hauer went on to say that by Deckard being a replicant, it actually detracts from the symbolism at the end, the importance of the climax, which in his mind was always man versus machine. If Deckard's a replicant, it's just two androids having a fight.
But I don't hate the idea of the machine versus machine thing, because it is just my perception versus your perception. Like, there's still something you can read in there. My thing is just, what extra does this give us? I don't think it detracts or adds. For me, it's just like, oh, you throw a twist in, and I don't care. I wasn't that into the film to have an opinion on it. That's what I mean. Like,
I think that whole revelation is just Ridley Scott trying to drum up a bit more interest in a film that really didn't make a lot of money.
But you know what did make some money?
He spent $28 million on it, and that was over budget.
Typical.
And it only took 41 at the box office. So maybe with marketing, it maybe made its money back, maybe not.
Yeah, right.
Enough to get a sequel, though, eventually. But in saying that, it's also Ridley Scott, who's going to say, no, you can't make your film.
He didn't direct it.
He didn't direct the new one.
He didn't direct the new one.
Then why are we doing it?
He was just a producer for it.
God damn it.
Because there was enough.
It's got Jared Leto in it.
So. There was that's not a selling point.
There was enough cult interest in it. Again, kind of fueled, I think, by the, you know, it's a whole who shot first thing, which Star Wars didn't need.
No, I mean, why are we reviewing it if we didn't fucking direct?
Deckard being a replicant is Blade Runner's who shot first.
Yeah,
because people are going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. You know, people who love it are going to keep it alive, and that's how you drum up interest for a sequel.
Yes.
Or keep the royalties coming in.
How did Denis Villeneuve, fuck him, sneak into our Ridley Scott James Cameron retrospective, and I just found out about it too late.
Ridley Scott is still a producer. He's still heavily involved in the,
I
in
don't,
the production. He's just, he didn't direct it though.
Oh, fucking, I've been tricked. I've been tricked into watching.
Got nothing set in stone. We don't have to do the Blade Runner sequel.
No, it's which fine. Is, we'll watch the 2 hour and 44 Blade Runner sequel.
Nah, that's done.
With Dave Bautista.
Oh, all right.
I'm back in.
We can talk about that before next week.
What?
About whether we're doing Blade Runner 2049 or not.
It's too late. It's too late. I'm committed. I didn't watch it 3 years ago. I'm kind of interested in watching it now.
We've locked it in. Bautista, guys.
The first 20 minutes with Dave Bautista is the only interesting part of the film.
Also, it's an 8 out of 10 on IMDb. People apparently like this film.
Even this one carries an 8.1.
And so people are that's a very comparative score to the original. Mm. It's not bad.
And Rotten Tomatoes, huge score. 90% critical, 91 audience.
Okay, so very,
very popular.
You know who's amazing in general in films? Edward James Olmos. But I also felt he was really underserved in this film.
Yeah, he's kind of just in it as a cameo a few times.
Good actor, though.
You don't really get any insight into Gaff. Who are you? I mean, you know, he's just a detective, a Blade Runner himself. who is, you know, maybe one step ahead of Deckard, maybe just pursuing something different and is finally.
But he's in the sequel.
Yeah, sort of.
I'm just reading the names on the cast list here. I'm excited to see.
Does the sequel follow this film's story, or is it just a different replicant story?
Look, it's the same world, and Deckard is in it. You know, 20 years on, or aged, or whatever it is. But I don't think it's as good.
Right.
So before we get,
and we're following in the new one, you follow Ryan Gosling's character, who from the start is explicitly, he is a replicant.
Okay.
He's a replicant charged with...
Then he finds out he's a people.
No.
I've not seen it. I'm just joking.
No, it's not as good.
Can I...
Ambiguity is what makes these films good. And right. Blade Runner carries ambiguity enough that it keeps the debate going. But
yeah.
2049, it just says, no, this is a replicant hunter. And that's it. Case closed.
I just realized how many films this year I've watched or we've reviewed that have all come from the same source material of Philip K. Dick, though.
Yeah.
Because we did Total Recall.
Yep.
So I guess technically both of those came from him, even though I'd say one of them definitely did more than the other. Minority Report, which I don't think we reviewed, but I've recently rewatched.
We should do that instead of 2049.
It's too late. I only just watched it like a month ago. I don't want to watch it again. I just watched it. The Adjustment Bureau, which I actually quite like that film.
Never seen it.
It's like Dark City, except they're angels or something. That was a bad sell.
Philip K. Dick loved the casting. He was very enthusiastic about Rutger Hauer as Roy and Harrison Ford as Deckard.
Yeah. Well, Rutger Hauer was great in this film.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He improvised a lot of his own stuff and added a lot to the character. Even the line, his final line, all the moments are lost, like tears in the rain. Improvised it. That wasn't scripted.
Oh.
That was him. And good. I mean, he really got into the character.
Yeah, clearly.
He bought a yacht as well with some of his fee from the film and called it...
Some of his fee. Jesus.
And called it The Blade Runner.
Oh, that's cool.
That's it. It's Rutger Hauer's favorite film and it's Ridley Scott's favorite film of his. It's not Harrison Ford's favorite film. He hated doing it.
I believe you said you plan on speaking about this.
I don't feel like Harrison Ford enjoys a lot of things.
Yeah. I think you told me you wanted to speak about this on the following Variety Hour. So this Wednesday's Variety Hour, but you played the Blade Runner video game, right?
Yes, I certainly did.
Is that available from your knowledge on like Steam these days? Or is that like you played it like
not on
when it came
Steam.
Out?
Steam. I haven't played it recently. God, I remember it from when I was a teen.
Yep.
But from what I understand, it is available somewhere. Not on Steam though, unfortunately.
GOG or something. Good old games or orders. I'll have a look because I'm curious now too. I'm having a look at screen grabs of it and I'm like, oh, I've got time to spare.
Yeah. So the original confrontation between Roy and Deckard as scripted was this martial arts, kung fu, matrix style fight. Not only did Rutger Hauer not know kung fu.
It's available. It's $13 on GOG.
Oh, good. So if you should get it. It's fun.
I don't know if it works on my fucking Mac. As you were. Sorry. I'll just... Oh, it does work on my Mac. Oh, it's tempting. Is it good?
So not only did Rutger Hauer not know kung fu, he actually thought it wouldn't be very good to have this fight instead of more of a battle of the wills thing.
Right.
Which is... And he claims that he came up with the idea for Deckard being chased. At the end.
Mm.
It's quite a long sequence. Like it's just 10 minutes of him being chased through this building while he's, you know, beaten up and kind of maimed with his fingers. And Roy is just kind of toying with him, but he's not really intent on killing him.
Yeah.
It's. I don't think...
I do feel like that's better than a kung fu fight with no context as to why they know kung fu.
So much better. And, you know, it's... and. A kung fu fight is just a fight. And all the worse if Deckard is a replicant because then it's just two robots fighting.
Yeah.
And while that's cool to see, not at the end of, you know, 2 hours of film that you've invested in,
exactly.
You know, asking what the hell is going on just to be treated with two robots fighting. That would be disappointing.
Yeah.
Unless it's T2. But it's more than okay.
But you're not spending all that time
thinking he's a human.
Thinking what the hell is going on because it's been robots fighting the whole way through.
Yep.
T2 is robots fighting with a climax of robots beating the shit out of each other.
I thought I was playing Rock'em Sock'em Human, and it turned out that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ridley Scott cast Rutger Hauer, having never met him. Just saw a couple of his other films and said, that's the guy, that's Roy, I want him. He was quite surprised. I think the quote was that he turned white when Rutger Hauer showed up for his first day, deliberately as a prank, showed up with big green sunglasses, white jacket, pink satin pants.
What a look.
Rutger Hauer, the champion that he is.
Oh, I didn't realize that he had recently passed, I say recently, last year passed last away. Year,
yeah.
Aw. Was he in the last Blade Runner as a different replicant that looked exactly
no,
the same?
No. Everybody's dying, Seb.
No, I mean, like, what was he in 2049?
No, he wasn't.
He was the bad guy in Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah. He was also the hero in Blind Fury. He was a blind martial arts master.
He was the hobo with a shotgun in Hobo with a Shotgun.
He has quite a repertoire.
Wait, he was in Batman Begins? Earl? Who the fuck is Earl? Must have been a party guest or something.
Oh,
shit. That's right. No, he's credited as Earl. And Earl has lines.
So the...
No, this is more important, Andrew. Who the fuck is Earl in Batman Begins? Bruce Wayne answered the phone. Bruce Wayne. Earl, what makes you think that you can decide who's running Wayne Enterprises? The fact that I'm the owner... What are you talking about? The public went, oh.
He must be some kind of desk jockey.
He's the corporate antagonist. He's the one that... He's the one that's like, didn't you get my memo? The memo guy.
Okay.
I did not recognize
him. They should have credited him as memo guy. I would have recognized it.
Oh, I didn't realize that was him. He looks completely different. Like he aged 20 years.
Yeah, who would have thought?
No, but he does look completely different.
30 at that point from this film.
Look at his face. I mean,
from this film, which is based on the Philip K. Dick novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
But do they?
In that book, the androids weren't called replicants. Replicants was invented for the film. Huh. Because the producers felt that calling them, as they do in the book, Andes was a bit silly.
It is a
androids, Andes. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Replicants just seem to be a bit more.
Yeah, that's fine.
Clinical.
That's an okay.
Especially
change.
When got a bit more oomph.
Especially when you're going around executing them. Yeah.
Also, what if they?
Nobody wants to kill an Andy. They'll fucking pop off on a replicant.
What if you're like, I'm heading over to the Andes? They'll think you're going to like the mountains or some shit. Like there's too many miscommunications there.
That's exactly right.
The two cops from Hot Fuzz. Like this. Yeah. No one's going to mix them up with a replicant.
Sid Mead, who went on to do quite a lot of art at the time of making this film, had only been involved with Star Trek the Motion Picture.
Okay, yeah.
So he was hired for a few days just to do some of the concept art for the vehicles and props. But in doing that, he included these backgrounds for context that Ridley Scott just fell in love with. So from an original... contract of a few days, he was hired on for several weeks to do all the visual design for the film at a cost of I think was like $1,500 a day.
Right,
was the I want to make that much,
and it just kept on being extended. That'd be nice. Ridley Scott just loved his work.
Yeah,
and he went on
he did
to
a great job. The set design's like one of my favorite parts of the whole movie.
Yeah, and Sid Mead went on to do Aliens and a whole bunch of other films that were just Elysium, just look stunning. And this voiceover, this controversial voiceover, it was originally, the seeds were sown after Ridley Scott did his first cut, his first final cut of the film.
His first final
cut. For everybody. And after watching it, they all said, Ridley, it's beautiful. It is just beautiful. It's a visually beautiful film. I love watching it. It doesn't make any sense. It's incomprehensible. And it's 4 hours long.
Good Lord.
Zack Snyder.
That's when a few people kind of said, maybe we need some voiceover just to explain what the hell is going on. And Ridley cut some scenes. We don't need this to be 4 hours long. But that's when it was sort of started. And by the time they got around to doing a few test screenings that weren't really hitting the mark, that's when the producers said, we really have to do this. And nobody was on board, especially Harrison Ford. They went ahead with it anyway. And I think it actually works, but that's just me.
Yeah,
sure. I seem to be in the minority for that one, of the few people that like the voiceover. The narration, I should say.
Yeah.
That sort of film noir narration.
Why do you do this to me?
I'm sorry, Seb.
No, it's fine. As punishment for this,
you're
though,
welcome. You're welcome
to 2049.
You're welcome to do as much trivia as you like.
Not so this. The trivia is fine. Yeah. It's the price I pay for the trivia. Hearing your opinions. is there anything else? Yeah, with no. Do I was going to get into the actual plot?
There's a lot of trivia.
Mm. This and Gladiator.
Seems like it would be being such like a big like kind of cult film. Yeah. There's always going to be so many little tidbits.
Yeah. It's almost like about. Ridley Scott just does too many things at once.
I was saying in the Gladiator review, just talking about how Ridley Scott goes into insane detail. In this one, yeah, he went into insane. There's a whole list of stuff that he did, like put signs in buses and on doors and things. All the magazines that you see in you don't even, you know, there's never any close-up of any magazine rack or anything. But they had magazines in the magazine rack. They weren't just off the shelf somewhere. They were every single one was made for the film,
right?
And they each had, you know, headlines for articles. You know, it was the title of the mag and its kind of style of whatever it was, whether it was a music thing or a tech thing or whatever it was reviewing, and you know, actual headlines. The insane detail.
Yeah,
that Ridley Scott calls layering, which is really just, you know, universe development.
Universe building.
Universe building. And just to set that scene. I think one of the bits of trivia for 2049 was that one of the actors... oh, no, that was for Total Recall.
Mm.
I don't know why I'm reminded of that.
Yeah, but well, it's so Philip K. Dick.
Colin Farrell slept on set, so he wanted to wake up in the future.
Yes, I remember that, yeah.
And I can understand somebody, you know, wanting to do that on a Ridley Scott set just because there would be this insane detail. You genuinely are in this other place because everything is just so foreign.
Yeah, right.
I can't imagine falling asleep anywhere, let alone on a set that's being constructed. But I mean, good on him.
And there's a lot of trivia, you know, countless documentaries that have been made about the making of Blade Runner and the meaning of Blade Runner, and you can go into, you know, everybody has an opinion about it.
Yeah, right.
It's a very popular film in that way. It's,
certainly.
Yeah, people love to debate over it, and I'm just like, yeah, it's fine. it's not bad at all. I'm going to get persecuted for that, I guess, having a neutral opinion about this film.
I came in the same way. Like, when I was like, obviously I knew like how popular and well-liked it was. Like, I think I'd seen it before, but like just watching it this time around, I got to the end of it, I was like, oh, that's it. That was fine.
I feel like I missed something with it because everyone's really into it. And I'm just like, it's not a bad film.
Yeah, like I was just like,
but yeah.
It takes like 50 minutes for something interesting to happen. And then it's like over after that. Like there's a few cool scenes and that's that.
I do wonder if this film has inspired a lot of other films visually.
Yeah. Mm.
I wonder, that would have been such a big thing when it came out in 82. I wonder if we're just being exposed to everything else.
I guess, because I do like the way it looks. Like the neon aesthetic to it is really nice. But like you said, like so many other films have done that since. So maybe it just kind of doesn't hit that same mark because...
So we're not wowed when we go into it.
And yeah, that could be it.
I like Harrison Ford in most films. Like he's always, because he's Bill Murray. As you know, Bill Murray's more talented. But he's like, but he's Bill Murray in a sense that he's just Harrison Ford. That's what he is. That's what you get. That's what you paid for.
Yeah.
And he very rarely diverges from that because you're never like, oh, what's the difference in Harrison Ford as Han Solo and Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones? And you're like, well.
He's wearing a hat.
Yeah, and Han Solo's gun shoots a laser. Like, that's what I mean. Like, it's visually they look different, but they're the same shit.
There's a huge difference between Indiana Jones and Deckard. Incidentally, do either of you know Deckard's first name?
Ooh.
Which is not mentioned in the film once or even in the end credits. Okay. Don't look it up.
No, I'm on it, but I'm not looking at it. I wanted to say the word Charles is what I would call him. I'm going to hit. Oh.
No.
Yeah. It's not Charles.
It's not Charles. It's Rick. And if you paid more attention, you would know that. Even though it's not mentioned.
I thought they were calling him Dick.
Is that so?
Although Rick, short for Richard, then short for Dick, and he's a detective, it works. You can get there in the end.
Man, but he's not a private dick, is he?
He's a retired.
He's a retired dick. He's an old dick.
But I've also never seen him younger in a movie before.
No, Indiana Jones and Deckard.
No, the characters do different things. I'm just saying, but his the way he speaks, the way he does, he holds himself and presents himself, it's all the same shit. Sure. And that's not bad. It's just like you get Harrison Ford. That's what you're paying for. You're not paying for an actor. You're paying for a face and a voice.
100%. I would argue that.
You're welcome to.
I was born in 1983, so I didn't see this in the theater. I've never seen this in a cinema. And I think I'd like that. I think
it'd be nice experience to actually do that, yeah.
I saw 2049 when it came out in the cinema, and I didn't like the story very much, but I did enjoy the experience because it's such an atmospheric film.
That's you can enjoy it again next week.
That's what I love about Blade Runner is that, the story it tells is not horribly complicated. It does ask a lot of questions about ethics and metaphysics. You know, what are you? Are you more than just the sum of your parts, or is it the sum of your parts that makes you whatever those parts happen to be? You know, does that transcend into something else? Good questions to ask, and you don't really get any resolution from them from the film, which is fine. Because you don't need to tie that bow off. You know, people have been asking these questions for thousands of years. It's not like one film is going to solve it once and for all.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so nice to be along for the ride. Everything is so detailed. You believe that this world exists, and there's nothing about it that is contemporary in any way. It's not an alien world, but it may as well be, because there's this world where humanity is still the same, but everything else is different.
Yeah.
And you believe that it's real. I do anyway.
Yeah. That's definitely something that I appreciated about the film. Yeah. It's like, the whole atmosphere to it and its world building and all that sort of thing is quite well done.
Do we want to get into the actual film and the plot then? Or?
Okay. It's really not that complicated.
Neither of these films are. I've noticed. No. Because we did Gladiator just last week, and it's big sprawling stories, but very basic.
Ridley Scott, even Alien, which we'll be doing after Blade Runner, even Alien isn't an elaborate story. It just takes its time to be told, and that's fine because everything else is just so enjoyable along the way. So this film, two things are going on. You've got Deckard, who is pulled out of retirement. There's been some replicants that have escaped from somewhere. He was basically done with his job on Earth, but these are new replicants and only he has the experience to deal with it, or whatever the reasoning is. And he's been pulled back into service. He doesn't care. He's not in it for any, moral reason, political reason. He's just basically been told, you're doing this, you don't have a choice. And that's fine because he'll get paid for it, and that's all that matters to him at the moment. And you've got the replicants themselves who they're a new breed that genuinely believe they are human or should be human, and when they find out that their life is artificially shortened to 4 years, they go on this crusade to extend that, and As a process of that, they end up getting to the head of the Tyrell Corporation, which manufactures the replicants, and also Tyrell himself writes the brain code or whatever it is for these replicants. They end up meeting him and having a tete-a-tete.
Super reasonable motivation for the bad guys as well in this film. I just would like to not die soon, if that's okay, please. I didn't make myself.
Have a crumb of more life, please.
Yeah,
And their paths cross a little bit during it, but it's really following, for the most part, Deckard's investigation and trying to track down what they're doing. It's very film noir. It's very dark.
Yeah.
He's got a very loose set of clues and leads at the beginning, and he's just systematically going through, exhausting every single one and seeing where it leads.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. Like, it's a typical detective story. It's not my favorite style of a detective story, though. I like, one of my favorite films in general, not just like this sort of noir detective-y thing, is Shutter Island. I fucking love that movie. Yeah. And I know that movie has a lot more going involved in terms of mental health and all the twists and all that shit. But that style of story, for me, sits a lot better than this. The setting's not bad, the story's not bad, but for some reason for me, when they come together in this case, I'm just not in love with it. But I should be. I should like both of these parts. I just don't.
I think the film is brilliant that it's so focused, that it's all the events happening in this one city. You know, in the hands of another director, they might have taken it out to space given more backstory to Roy, or sort of shown some of the things that he's talking about. Ridley Scott didn't do that. He just, no. We'll just have Roy talking about it, and that's fine. And we'll focus on his emotion, which is really what's going on. He's finding out that he's not human, despite having every fiber of his being say, "Yeah, you are human, and this is all real, and this all really happened."
Yeah.
I agree. Sorry. I was like, why to go quiet? What's happened?
I mean, there's not a lot of details that you can go. First of all, the film is visually beautiful. Mm. And
it's very nice to look at.
A world of its own. Yeah. It's futuristic, and it's dark, and it's gritty and hopeful at the same time. There's so much that blast you in the face all at once.
Yeah. I thought they would clean it up a little bit more on Netflix when I watched it. It was still very grainy, which I know it's always going to be because it's an older film. I just figured with the 27 remasters they did, it would just look a little bit crisper, but it still felt really old, which is fine.
I don't understand that because I watched a really crisp version of the theatrical release,
Like it wasn't...
But that may have been like a Blu-ray copy or something.
I mean, who knows what the bloody Netflix is giving us. Yeah. It should be 1080 at least, though. I'd assume, but yeah. Anyway, doesn't matter.
Maybe Netflix isn't springing the cash.
Yeah, that sounds like it.
Those Stranger Kids things aren't bringing enough money.
But along the way, Deckard is introduced to, fairly early in the film, introduced to Terrell's assistant, Rachel, who he discovers is a replicant, is a Nexus 6. She doesn't have
the... Was she a 6? I thought she was the one beyond. No, she was a 6? Okay.
She's a 6, but she doesn't have the artificial shortening of her life. So she's going to live indefinitely. Who knows? Right. She may not even die or age like a human does. But Deckard falls for her. He's given explicit instructions to kill her along the way, that she becomes the fifth of the original four to get rid of because she's a replicant and replicants are outlawed on Earth. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't. He falls in love with her.
Can we talk about the test a little bit? Because it's
the Voight-Kampff test?
Yes. I think it's one of the most interesting concepts in the movie that they don't really elaborate on in this one. Do they go into a bit more of it in the sequel?
I don't think so.
I always liked this part.
If you're paying attention, and maybe it's on subsequent viewing, they do explain that it's a test of emotional response.
Yeah.
And when you understand that the replicants have this fabricated memory, right? They have, I don't know how many different patterns there are, but there will be, a selection of these memories that they have, and that's just, they have this shared history like that. But not shared amongst them, because that would be random. And you wouldn't want to pair the same group of replicants with the same shared histories, and then they'd start to figure out what's going on. But they're going to use those memories in order to inform their decisions. So if you know where they're drawing their emotions from, you can kind of predict how they're going to respond to things, and that's the whole test.
Yep.
So it's looking for programmed responses to these sort of random questions that humans would answer creatively, but having a limited pool to draw on, replicants would answer in this very narrow way that they could be detected.
I thought it was like an empathy checker to see whether or not
they
had this element of, I hate saying this, humanity to their answers.
Well, again, that's the thing, because they're drawing on their memories to inform their responses, but their memories are discrete. It's just this pool of memories that we know beforehand, so we can create a test around that.
Now, I do go back a bit. I may have missed this in the intro. of both the movie and you saying about it. Why are they outlawed? What was the event that caused them to be outlawed?
There was some rebellion off-world of Nexus Sixes, and to prevent them from, you know, mixing amongst the human population on Earth, they were just outlawed. That if they were detected on Earth, they would be killed, and that would in some way act as a deterrent for any Nexus Sixes coming, any replicants at all, for that matter.
So it's
coming
not
back to Earth.
It's not Star Trek Picard, like the androids, you know, went all terrorist on us and blew them up. There was no like event like that. It was just they had a rebellion.
There was some rebellion somewhere, and in order to prevent any further rebellion, they were just outlawed on Earth.
Okay.
So they're still being used as slave labor or manual labor elsewhere in the solar system,
okay,
wherever they are.
But there's a company that makes them on Earth.
Yeah, and they're still manufactured. They're still used. They're just not allowed on Earth. Replicants aren't allowed on Earth because it's just too dangerous. Because they have this potential.
So they're legally manufactured. They're just not usable here.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess it's like if Australia started manufacturing assault rifles, like we can sell them to other countries, but they'd still be illegal to have to use here because we would ban that sort of.
Sure.
I guess is a really weird parallel for that. Okay. It just seems, I wasn't sure if the Tyrell Corporation was originally like some shadowy, like secret organization or this publicly traded company. Because it's like.
you've got explosives, which have legitimate uses in mining and other, you know, property development. You know, if you're building a tunnel, for example, you're just going to blast through. So dynamite isn't outlawed. You can't, you know, not manufacture dynamite. It's just limited where you can use it.
Okay.
Yep. And where you can store it and where it can, you know, be.
That works much better than my assault rifle one. Thank
no,
you.
That's
really
fine
does.
Too.
That's like generally that's so much better.
Okay, and yeah, they produce this machine, this tool that has very limited applications because of their volatility.
Okay, that was my question. I was going to say, did Star Trek Picard steal this with their android uprising? But no, it's a little bit different, to be fair.
And I think the film very lightly explains that the Nexus Sixes are this huge jump in mental capacity, that they themselves are starting to evaluate their own mortality, their own existence. Whereas previously the machines were smart, but never smart enough to realize they were machines. They took their orders, and that was it. They could interact with humans without any interruption to what's going on, but they wouldn't really be self-aware, whereas the Sixes are.
I feel like this, I know this is part of the plot in the sense that it's driving the antagonists because of all this. I feel like this needed a little bit more spotlight because this is interesting right now.
It is interesting.
For me, this is more interesting and more engaging
and
than the actual movie.
You'll enjoy watching it again.
Yeah. Maybe.
With this new layer on
and
top.
And honestly, maybe in 2049, haven't seen it, can't say for sure, but because we're following one of these replicants that's in the same situation, maybe we'll get more insight into that exact thing because we're actually following someone telling us that story.
I haven't seen it since it came out, but from what I remember, 2049 asks fewer questions than this movie does about what's real and what matters.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I don't hate this idea. Much like with Star Wars, I don't hate
you?
The world they built Star Wars in. I just hate the movies they decided to make. All of them, they're terrible. But good setting. And for me, this is one good setting. Give me an RPG here. I'll fucking have a great time. But the story that they chose to tell is just not grabbing me yet.
But by the end of it, Deckard is kind of getting around to Roy's thinking of, okay, is he the product of his false memories, or has he incorporated them into his own experience in such a way that he could now be seen as human?
Yeah.
You know, is he a real person because he's kind of questioning what's going on instead of just reacting to his programming?
Yeah. There's some really good places to go with all of this.
Yeah.
I just, so close.
It's
not badly done. It's just all these questions that I want them to follow through on specifically get relegated to a scene of them torturing an Asian man for 10 minutes in a freezer with some eyeballs. Like, that's what I mean. Like, there's scenes that I would love to be extended out and pulled on. Like, I would love them to explain more, like how the testing works to determine this split between humanity and not, but they don't. They just
Well, that's not a split in humanity.
The difference between...
You've got the same Nexus Sixes responding to the situation in different ways. Roy is very calm in how he's doing it. He's very determined in where he wants to go, and he's speaking to Chen about who do I go to about finding out how to extend my life. That's all I care about. I don't care about your life, but I'm not gonna do anything to you. Just give me the information, and you know I'll do what I have to get that. Whereas Leon is, you know, he's
Leon's the one from the beginning, right?
Yes,
the one that's obviously a robot. Like from the get go, he's obviously a robot. It's like you guys have seen The World's End, the Simon Pegg film, yeah. When like they're sitting out like in the pub and the two twins walk in, and like, no, those are robots. Yeah. That's what this is.
So and he's kind of reveling in this, you know, torment. He's enjoying it. That's how he's breaking his programming and responding to it. He's enjoying something that he hasn't been bestowed with. And the same way Roy is, he's going after his mission. That's his goal. He wasn't programmed with any of that, but he's very, you know, responding to it differently from Leon. He's not keen on the torment. He just wants to get to the goal.
And I think they said when they were going through like the rap sheets of all these guys, I think Leon was like a military purpose or something as well. He had something like he was like for arms or for mining. There was some physical that's what role I mean. That he had.
You would expect a guy like that to be violent with Chen, but he's not violent. He's just, he places the eyes all around him. And it's...
But why?
It's so... That's exactly right. Mm. It's so weird. And that's how he's breaking his programming.
Yeah.
Roy's not on board with any of that, but he's perfectly fine with Leon doing it because it unsettles Chen and maybe he'll give up some information that Roy can use.
Yeah. Can we speak about obvious robots as well? JF Sebastian.
Yeah.
What a weird boy.
He's weird.
Yeah. Also, if he was a robot, I wouldn't be surprised. Everyone in this movie could be a robot is what I'm trying to say. I know he's not, but he would have been if he could.
But he's lonely. He's got this degenerative disease where he ages, you know, faster than his biological age, his organs age faster than that. And he's been a loner all his life. So he literally makes his friends.
Yeah.
They're very basic replicants.
They're toys. He literally like brought some essentially to life, toys. Yeah. That was actually really creepy. The little
kind of
nutcracker one that ran in or whatever. I was like, oh, don't like it. I had flashbacks to bloody Wizard of Oz with the Munchkins, whatever.
Yeah.
But no thanks. Yeah.
It's kind of like pets. In the sense,
that, I guess so.
You know, if you had a pet and it was perfectly trained and always did what you asked. That's exactly what these things are.
Yeah. Wish my dogs would do even one thing that I've asked.
They're there to be company. They're never going to surprise him. They're never going to do anything out of the ordinary. They're just there to make him feel like he's not alone.
Yeah.
So where are we on plot?
But he is a weird guy because of that. Sure.
Yeah. Everyone is such a character in this film. Like there's no normal people, for lack of better terms. I know movies are meant to be about these fantastic situations, but every character is so unique in this film. And that's not a detriment. I'm just saying like every character is so vastly different. The most normal character we have in the entire thing is the chief of police or whatever that recruits him. Yeah. He's the only one that's not unusual in some way, but every other character is just, what is going on?
Why would you say that?
I just feel like they're all like, they've all got quirks about them. Like
definitely.
Yeah.
But everybody does.
I know everyone does. But in this film, it stood out to me. Like it just felt like everyone had a gimmick to them.
What's Deckard's gimmick? I know what you
mean. Deckard's gimmick is nothing. He's just boring.
He drinks because...
And he sees unicorns.
Because his job was to kill these things that look like people. And eventually that'd get to you. He doesn't want to do this anymore. And when he does, when he kills the stripper, the first thing he does is go to a bar and, you know, is this enough? I don't know. I just need this bottle of booze because I want to forget about what I just did.
The stripper that he kills, by the way, I was confused because the replicants also, when you shoot them, have red blood that comes out of them.
Yeah.
Was she a replicant or not?
Yeah, she was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was.
That's why I took multiple shots. That's why she kept on running, even though she was blasted in the chest.
That's true. I was just thinking because I was like, because of his reaction, I was like, did he accidentally kill a human? Was my thought. Because they raised the question at the beginning of the film, have you ever killed, retired a person? And he's like, nope.
Because my career would be over if I did.
Yep. I like the term retiring someone too. It's nice.
Nice.
It's a nice way of phrasing.
Yeah,
nice
it helps you sleep at night, I guess.
Oh, no, it sounds like really mobster. I don't know, I like it. As opposed to like, yeah, I iced the bitch. Like, you know, yeah, I retired them. That sounds like you're being polite, but also threateningly polite.
Yes, I put them to bed.
Yes.
Forever.
With a gun. Oh, shit. Okay, where are we? I've lost track of where we are on the plot, though. Rutger Hauer.
Yes.
Probably. There's a good chance we're with him.
Well, no, we haven't really discussed the... I mean, the plot is quite simple. It's Deckard systematically, you know, chasing
down the replicants.
Yeah, being a detective and going after clues and you being along for that ride and also following the replicants, primarily Roy, again, jumping from place to place as he escalates up the chain to get himself some more life.
Yeah. Why did Roy...
Which ultimately Terrell reveals to him is impossible.
Mm.
They've engineered it in such a way that by trying to bypass it just causes more problems, causes more viruses, and you just die quicker. So you can't do it. Very sorry. That's just the way it is. You're going to die just like everybody else.
And then he kills Terrell, which I thought was a weird...
Because he can't help him.
Yeah.
He kills Terrell because there's no reason for him to be alive anymore and he's taking his revenge.
I would have rather he didn't because along the way, I know we hear that they killed people when they escaped, but I remember when it first happened, but it was off camera and we know they did it to escape. So all the kills I've seen up until that point have been them just trying to defend themselves. But when he does this... Or trying to free himself. When he does this, it's his actual, like, out of anger, I'm upset, kill the guy. And that's sort of his turning point from being this sort of ambivalent character that you could sympathize with because he is just trying to stay alive and he's not actively causing harm to people just because, to he kind of fully turns evil. This entire movie is a heel turn. And this moment here is when he decides, I'm now a bad guy.
No. The whole time, Roy is convinced that he'll find the way out, that all he has to do is get the right place, ask the right questions, you know, with the right people, and there'll be this cure. He can have his injection or his therapy or whatever it is, you know, he plug himself in, press a button, and he'll just get his more life. And Terrell is finally the person, this hope, all the whole way up. And he gets to Terrell, and he's got this hope that it's going to be over. He's going to get his life. He's not going to die. And Terrell says, No, you have no hope. This is how it is, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm not even sorry. That's just the way it is. You're a product.
I'm not saying the murder wasn't justified. I'm just saying that for me is the point where he goes from he's a character that's just been trying to do what's right by him and his friends.
No, that's
since then he's a murderer.
Well, it's rage.
No, I'm not saying I don't get why he did it. It's just for me, it's like that's the point where.
But it's not he's cold.
Now a bad guy.
It's not cold. He doesn't kill Terrell because he doesn't like him anymore.
He kills him in a fucked up way, though.
Yeah, it's rage. He's pissed off that he's had this hope the whole time that he's not going to die senselessly, and Terrell takes it away. Terrell is the guy that takes that hope away from him.
Yeah.
It's not his fault, but that's the guy that takes away from him.
Yeah, but it is also the point that brings him past the point of redemption, though, in terms of the story, because now he is a murderer. True.
Well, he's killed a lot of people along the way. It's not like he's, you know, but he so could be redeemed.
But to escape this and escape that, that's what I mean.
Like, I get it, yeah.
And that's...
But the point is also to heighten the fact that he isn't human. There is a... He falls on a different side of the line to what humanity is.
Yes.
You know, and while he's doing things that other people might, he himself is not human despite acting like one.
Right.
Yeah, I get that. So then we do break down to the final confrontation. I guess we're going to jump ahead a little bit. And you said before, it's more of a chase scene than anything. As the hero is being chased. Yeah,
10-minute chase scene.
But it's the other way around because it's normally the hero chasing the bad guy. It's not.
Deckard's finally dispensed with everybody. I think Leon's the first guy he gets because he's going after...
Yeah.
From memory, yeah.
And Leon tries to kill him because, of course, he's going to be the first one sent out to get rid of him. Then it's the stripper. Then it's Pris back at J.F. Sebastian's place.
Good scene. I spotted her dead center in the entire time. When she was like, hiding.
Oh, it's not supposed to be hidden from the audience, but
it was well done.
From Deckard, yeah.
hidden. Because she did look like she belonged there as well. Yeah. Like, because I'm like, okay, I only recognize it because of the eye makeup, like the black streak across her eyes. But she looked like she was meant to be there. So it was really well done.
So Roy is the last of the four original ones. Rachel at this point has disappeared. She's seen Deckard kill the other replicants, especially the stripper, and she's disgusted by that, wants nothing to do with him at that point.
She's worked out, she knows for sure that she's replicant by now or not yet?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And that's like halfway through the film.
She has a really good suspicion, yeah.
Yeah, she confronts him at his place.
That's the unicorn dream scene.
Is that where it comes in?
Yeah, he's laying down and having a bit of a nap and she goes and plays the piano.
Because they do have a little bit of sexy times.
Yes, but it doesn't count double because they're both robots.
No.
That's actually one of the good scenes because that's where he lists off, and not to backtrack too much, hey, do you have this memory? Do you have this memory? Do you have this memory? Yep. You know why you do? Because you're not real.
Yep, and he lays it out for her. That's...
Yeah.
You think these are all real memories and I can tell you they're not because I've... Yeah.
And that's the same scene as when we see him have the unicorn dream, which will then pay off later.
Right.
Okay. So that's actually not badly done in terms of...
Maybe.
Well, I mean, in terms of they have this discussion to get this idea in your head and then like a minute later, he's having the unicorn dream. Yeah. So it's kind of like, for the audience, this is all related.
Yeah.
And then again.
So Roy, at this point, he comes back to Bradbury's apartment after having found out that there's nothing left for him. He kills Terrell. He kills Jeff Sebastian as well.
Yeah.
Off screen, we sort of hear about that with Bryant telling Deckard that Jeff Sebastian has been killed. By the way, he lives at the Bradbury Hotel. Why don't you go and check it out? Which is where he finds Pris and kills her. So Roy gets there and for a while he's just toying with him. Deckard's there to kill him and do a mission. He's got his gun out. The first instance he gets a clean shot, he takes the opportunity. But Roy just dances around and kind of plays with him.
Yeah.
And breaks a couple of his fingers and just says, that's right. Chases him through the hotel as, Deckard is beaten up and can't really handle it physically.
Holy shit.
He's out of shape from how he used to be,
Terrell is Lloyd the bartender from The Shining.
What?
Same actor.
Same actor. Yeah.
I did not recognize him at all.
Joe
Turkle.
Turkle.
Yeah. Oh, sorry to derail. I just didn't realize that was him. Because I know him so easily and so vividly as Lloyd, but didn't look a thing like him in this movie. And they wouldn't be too far apart, actually. 82 for this one. And what was Shining?
81, I think.
80. Yeah. So he's actually younger in the show.
In fact, the end credits where you get all the flyover shots, all the helicopter, that's all leftover material from The Shining.
Oh. Yeah.
They needed something for the end credits. Mm. Happened to be the same production house. Gave Stanley Kubrick a call and said, hey, you're Stanley Kubrick. We know you've got hours of footage left on the floor. Would you mind if we use some? And he said, yeah, as long as it's not something that was in the theatrical release of The Shining, go for your life.
Do you want an interesting fact about a much worse movie that did something similar?
Yes.
Last night I rewatched, because it came up on YouTube, not paid for, just like came up, the Digimon movie.
Oh.
And this movie, I'm trying to find the exact quote, was so short that it wasn't hitting theatrical and they add on a 4.5 minute sequence to the front of it where the characters from the Nickelodeon TV show Angela Anaconda go to the cinemas to watch the Digimon movie in a 4.5 minute skit.
Jeez.
Just to push it over the line. And it's fucked, man. I hate that show so much. I'm a huge Digimon advocate, better than Pokemon for so many reasons. I'll fight you all on that. But fuck me, Angela Anaconda's the worst. It's nightmares. It's
so terrible. Unsettling to look at.
How was that allowed?
I don't know. Like, I feel like that's part of the reason why so many people in our age group have childhood trauma. Like, trauma is because of things like that show. It's just not right.
Three seasons. It went for three seasons. Someone was like, this is good. Let's do this for two more years. Christ, it's nightmare inducing. Anyway, sorry.
Roy, the whole time during this chase, is trying to stave off death. I mean, that's why he pushes the nail through his hand, because he notices that he's starting to go physically. So he pushes the nail through just to feel something and keep himself alive for as long as possible, just to get some meaning out of the whole thing. And eventually he saves Deckard's life on the roof, doesn't let him just fall to his death, even though he kind of construed that whole situation. But he just has this wonderful little moment with Deckard on the roof. It doesn't even say that much, but he just kind of says, yeah, I've done all these fantastic things, and when I die, all that will be lost. It'll be, you know, the static on the, you know, it'll be lost like tears are in the rain.
Yeah.
And what does that mean? Was I really here? Was I just a program the whole time? All this preordained?
Right.
Good questions.
Yeah.
And yeah, valid. Never really resolved. Deckard himself kind of, you know, ruminates about the whole thing and kind of says, yeah, was he really real despite being this, you know, product that I could literally list off all the. His entire history, his entire memory up until the point where he was born
four years ago. In that position, like, have you really lived a life?
Mm. And did he, in the process of trying to live longer, did he transcend in some way?
Yeah, true.
You know? And then the film ends.
Yeah, and that's the end of it.
And we never find out.
Well, Deckard, of course, comes back to his apartment. Gaff... essentially, you know, kind of again in this nice cryptic language, says to him, maybe I've killed Rachel.
Mm.
You know, we all die sometime. Hope you enjoy the time with your girlfriend. he runs back and finds that, yes, she's still alive, thankfully, and he escapes town with her so that she'll never be hunted down. She, you know, maybe Gaff will say that he killed her or forget the whole thing, but he lets Deckard know that he was there and he let her live.
Yeah.
And it's up to Deckard what to do now. Mm-hmm. And strictly speaking, that's where the film ends.
Yeah.
About time.
No, Blade Runner.
Oh, sorry. Verdicts?
I think that's it because, like, the ending of the version that I watched seemed really abrupt. So I don't know necessarily if it's the same ending as every other cut, because it just felt really abrupt. Because it's like, it's that scene.
It kind of does.
Like, he gets back.
It kind of just finishes. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just like a random, like,
then they're sound bite
of him saying that line. Yep. And then it just cuts straight to the credits.
Yep.
I don't recall any car driving.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's just in the theatrical release.
Yeah. It could be. Because, like, it just seems like it ends out of nowhere. Like, because it's all resolved. Like, he gets there. Rachel's still alive. And then there's a scene, like, just after he finds her, it's just like him. He's walking somewhere alone. I don't remember exactly where, and it just plays like, I can't remember what the line is, whatever he had said like about her not that long ago, just plays again.
Oh,
that's, and then the credits just cut.
Another version again. I've never seen that.
I was like, that's a weird way to end the film. Okay.
I mean, as Seb said, there are 17 different cuts of this film.
Oh, it just never ends. I'm hitting the verdict button. This is happening.
Go on.
You've heard the good, you've heard the bad, a lot of opinions, a couple facts.
Yeah, it's fine. No, it's not bad. It is well made. It's a bit dry at points, and not every movie has to be like bam bam exciting. I think it's just honestly, it's really dark in a lot of places. I mean, visually, I mean, okay, yeah, from a motive standpoint, a little bit dark too. But it's visually surprisingly bland at points, which is a crazy thing to say about a film that's also crazy visually in points.
Mm.
But it just didn't really hold my attention. But I mean, it's not a bad movie. I'm gonna irk on the side of recommending it. But if next week's version of the sequel with, you know, modern sensibilities when it comes to pacing and ideas can't get this idea to be more exciting, I'm just gonna have to fall back on the, well, it'd make a good D&D campaign. recommend.
That's I feel a bit the same. Like, I would recommend it purely because I feel like it's one of those movies, like, you can just say that you've seen it because it is like such a well-liked kind of cult classic. And I enjoyed it, but same as you, like, I find there is sections where it was like a bit dry or slow. Like I said, like, the first like big thing in the movie doesn't happen for like nearly an hour into it. Like, it starts off really slow. Visually, it's really nice and the story is really simple. But I feel like the status that it has as like being this film that's heralded so highly, I personally found it to come off a bit overrated, but I still enjoyed it. I just don't know if I'd be like, I'm not going to rush back to watch it again or anything like that.
I enjoy this film for the atmosphere and the environment that it sets. It's very convincing.
Well,
like,
so that's something I really liked about it as well.
You can lose yourself in it.
Mm.
You know, if you pay attention to what's going on, you're not distracted on a phone or with other people walking in and out of the room. It's dark and you're focused on the screen. I think you can really get into it. I certainly do.
Like you said before, I think it would be a good film to see like in a theater because you'd have that real like immersion to it.
And I think the thing that makes the film really good is that it is ambiguous enough that you can discuss it and should discuss it after watching it, because it makes the subsequent viewing, however many months or years afterwards, makes it even better because you've got all that in the back of your mind and then you build on top of that. And now I understand this a little bit more, and maybe that's just a lot of wank and it's just you convincing yourself of these things, but you can make the argument. You can have the discussion. I think that's what makes this film spectacular.
Mm. It's been a great talking point. I'll give it that. Absolutely.
It asks more questions than it answers, and then when you ask those questions, it further gives more questions. Right. And, okay, I want to know more. I want to talk about this more.
Mm.
Because the film is about more than just what happens in the film.
Yeah, of course.
It asks questions that all of us are asking, you know, on the periphery in the background anyway. It's not a, you know, coffee in the morning kind of day-to-day, you know, this is my, you know, list of things to do film, which a lot of films are.
Sure.
It's a film about all those things that you don't spend a lot of time on because you've got to do all this other stuff to make sure you're alive in the first place. But then when you do have this little moment and you are wondering what the hell all this is about, that's where this film comes into its own.
Yeah, that's fair.
So as for what's coming up for us, we've got some doozies, guys. Apart from the Variety Hour on Wednesday, the following Monday, we are doing Blade Runner 2049, and that ends us sort of on our Ridley Scott thing. No, not really.
So we've got Alien
right after. So we take a brief 1 week pause where it's sort of Ridley Scott, sort of not, and we do Alien, and then we're doing Aliens, and then we slide into the Terminator franchise.
Yes.
So yes, we're not doing the full quadrilogy and sequels and prequels and all that shit for the Alien franchise. If you guys want us to.
Just the two that matter.
Yep.
Because they're the only ones that James Cameron did.
Hey, and if it's a series you like, let us know and we'll consider it for next year.
But if no one
wants us to, also that speaks louder than anything else. But yes, we've got some good shit lined up. And then we kind of, after Terminator, we segue into October. So we'll have like a Halloween spectacular for those 4 weeks.
I have nothing to do with October schedule.
No, you sort of do.
But you're welcome for Ridley Scott and James Cameron.
Do we want to reveal like the four planned movies for October?
Sure.
So we've got Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed, Cabin in the Woods. And then we've just written down Halloween and we didn't quantify. Well, we may have, and I wasn't listening. Is this the original Halloween or we're doing the remake Halloween?
72.
72. I'll make sure I note that down. So we're doing the original.
I think that's the year. I'm pretty certain.
I'll look it up. That's fine. Perfect. So there is some good stuff mixed and some, more horror. I'm already really nervous about doing the Alien films. I don't like jump scares. Like, that's what kills me. Tension? Fine. Gore? I mean, not my favorite, but I can watch it. Jump scares? No.
You know what, Seb? Find us on Instagram at Second Take Podcast, or if you live in the future, you can tweet us at Second Take TNC.
The Facebook page is facebook.com/secondtake. You can also follow me on Twitter at JordanMSPP.
You can follow me at Bastion_James. Our website is secondtakepodcast.com, or email us at secondtakepodcast@gmail.com. And finally, if you'd like to support the show, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/secondtake. And we will see you on Wednesday with the Variety Hour. Second Take podcast is recorded within the Moreton Bay region of Queensland, Australia, and acknowledges this region's original owners, namely the Jinnabara, Cubby Cubby, and Yugara people. Second Take podcast respectfully acknowledges the traditional custodians of these lands, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging, for they hold the memories, the traditions, the cultures and hopes of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.